It's on the screen. I am recording, motherfucker. Hello.
Hello. I don't know what accent that was.
I don't know. I woke up singing Creed, so you know it's going to be a... I mean, it can only get better from there, right? Except wrong, because then the coffee pot is not making coffee correctly. So that's fucked up.
I don't know enough lyrics to Creed songs to have one in my head.
It was just...
But I have...
No, it was just, and I say, whoa. That's all it was.
Have you seen the Creed Shreds video?
Yes, yes. We have watched it together, as a matter of fact.
Oh. Because I always have, I don't know why I'm always doing that. Time to take off my glove. Those are the only Creed lyrics I know.
I have no idea why that was in my head this morning, but it was very mystifying and upsetting. And then, so I cleaned the coffee pot the other day, like you do, with vinegar, whatnot, followed directions, all good. Everything was fine yesterday. Made coffee, tasted fine. Today, all the coffee tastes like shit. So, I don't know, like it's all watery and weird. I've made it, like, we've made 4 pots of coffee today, like, small pots of coffee, but, like, that's it. Just buy a new coffee pot, fuck it. I don't know. Anyway, first world problems! What's going on with you?
So, well, Mr. Scarlet just got the Indiana Jones, I guess, not trilogy, there's 4 of them, yes. But the 4th one doesn't count.
Oh my god.
But they came out in 4K, and he's seen Last Crusade... I think he's seen Raiders of the Lost Ark, but he had never seen Temple of Doom, which was my favorite as a child,
yes.
But I haven't seen it in a real long time. So we watched it. It is not very good, but I do remember why I liked it so much as a child, because you've got the mineshaft cart, like, yeah. That's super exciting. That's very, like, 4-year-old level action. There's a rickety rope bridge,
ooh.
Which is something that children find fascinating and terrifying, a thing that we have never encountered.
I mean, I still find it fascinating and terrifying as an adult, but right, like I don't come across many rope bridges in my suburban life.
And of course, the thuggy Kalima cult, which is not super accurate. Although some of it is, like, some of the mantras they use are actual Sanskrit mantras, but...
That's good.
Definitely set me on the path as a pagan. And so Mr. Scarlet has never seen it. And I was like, you know, I have an altar to Kali in the other room. And he was like, what?
Surprise witchery. What? No. That's awesome. I haven't seen those movies in a long time. I know I've watched them as an adult, though, again, because I think when I met Mr. Blackbird, he was like, what, you've never seen Indiana Jones 2, 3, and 4? I'm like, probably not. So I'm pretty sure he made me watch them. It was great. I enjoy them. They are no national treasures, but maybe it's just
they are not as delightful as I remember as a child. Yeah. Raiders of the Lost Ark is significantly less enjoyable when I think about how the main love interest had an affair with Indy when she was like 15 and he was already a professor, so he was like 27 or so. And
that's problematic.
She literally says to him, I was a child, you knew it was wrong. And he goes, you knew what you were doing.
Wow.
And I was like, that, wow, the rest of this movie is...
Holy shit.
Not enjoyable in light of that.
That's kind of amazing that back when we were kids, or even when, I mean, when that movie came out, shit, I was practically still a child. It's like, man, you could just get away with saying whatever the fuck back then.
Well, when I was a kid, people that were 16, 20... 30, all seemed impossibly old. So yes. The difference between those ages was completely incomprehensible to me.
Right. Ugh. Well.
So kind of gross.
Yeah, just a little gross.
Sorry, I just ruined Indiana Jones for everybody.
That's okay.
Just go watch Star Wars. It's a much more enjoyable Lucas, Harrison Ford adventure.
You knew what you were doing. Anyway.
Ew.
Ugh.
Cringe.
No good.
Something I watched that was delightful that has nothing to do with anything is I've been binging Aussie Man reviews. And it's just purely delightful. It's a guy with a really broad Aussie accent.
I love it.
Just talking over already hilarious internet videos. And it's just wholesome fun. And it's delightful.
Is that on YouTubes?
It is, yeah, it's on the YouTube, it's on the Facebook.
I have a,
It's Aussie, O-Z-Z-Y as an American would spell it.
Aussie Man Reviews. We have been watching many hilarious videos by a gentleman that goes by Davey504. He is, why is the doggy going crazy?
Hold on, let me get him.
We've been watching this dude that plays bass and goes by Davey504. He's really like super deadpan, and he speaks with what seems to be a German accent. I don't know, but he is hilarious. And he did this one video where he's a really skilled bass player, signed up for some online bass tutorials from other instructors to see if he could, like, you know, if they recognized him, and B, if they didn't, if he could actually learn something, or C, if they were just, like, not really able to teach bass. So it's pretty hilarious because there are a couple of guys that don't recognize him, but are like, oh man, yeah, you know what you're doing there. And but he did, like, learn a thing, but the guys that recognized him was like, oh man, hey, what are you doing taking a class from me? It was really cool. Anyway, he is, but he's very, like, deadpan. It's hilarious. I recommend it. And I have no idea what the actual channel's called. So, good job. I'll put that in the show notes in the newsletter.
Well, as a person that plays bass very poorly, married to a person that plays bass proficiently, that sounds very enjoyable.
You would like it. You and Mr. Scarlett would enjoy it very much, I think. Please, look it up.
Hey.
Hey, it's X-rated. Hey, that was pretty good. I am Blackbird.
I'm Scarlet.
And you're listening to the sweet, sweet sounds of Super Sorcerer Sunday. And today, man, this is a episode that we've talked about doing for a long time now. We both are real into perfume, scents, oils, what have you. Anything that is of the olfactory action. So we wanted to share, like, how we use it, why we use that, what it means to us, some of the history, we want to share it with you today.
So we'll see how a non-smell-o-vision podcast goes. But yes, we talk about perfume a lot. I would say that it's extremely witchy, just one, because I think the sense of smell is so basal, you know? It's so primal. If something smells good or smells bad to you, it's an instant gut reaction. It's really hard to develop a taste for something you do not like the smell of, the way that you could develop perhaps a taste for something, certainly for the sound. Like, you could become inured to a style of music or a song or something visual, certainly. So it's just so basic, and it's such a trigger for memory. Everyone's had that experience where out of nowhere you catch a whiff of something and it just reminds you of a super specific time and place. So that ability alone to me is very magical.
Absolutely. Do you have anything like that in your, like, I have one specific smell that I think about all the time. Do you also have one specific smell you think about all the time?
Not all the time, tell me yours, and I'll tell you if I have one.
Mine is weird because if you asked me to tell you what the actual, what I'm smelling, I cannot tell you that. But there was a very specific smell when I was growing up in right outside of Phoenix. So in the early 80s, like 82, 83, after it rained, but in the springtime, and it's got to be some like flower or grass or something there that blooms during that time. It was the best smelling air of all time. And I just remember being a kid and walking to school and smelling that smell every morning, walking to school, thinking, that is just the best smell. I have no idea what it is, but it smells so good. I think about that time all the time. Not all the time, but like at least once a month, I think about that. But I have no idea what the fucking smell was. Helpful.
I had horrible allergies as a child, so I don't have a lot of really strong childhood scent memories, I guess.
Yeah.
But I do, when I smell a perfume that I don't wear anymore, that I associate with a particular time and place when I did wear it, that will immediately remind me of that time and that location.
Yep. Yeah, I have that too, for sure. But anyway, let's talk about, do you want to start with a little bit of the history?
Yeah, there's a lot of history. I mean, it goes way, way back.
It does.
Since people could smell, they wanted to smell things that smell nice.
I mean.
And not smell things that smell bad.
That's a fact. I found it fascinating reading about the history and that, you know, as do many things, it starts in Mesopotamia that we can tell. And that the first chemist or recorded chemist is a woman, Taputi.
Hell yeah.
Tell us about Taputi.
There's not a ton of information
right.
about her,
right.
but she's super fucking rad. She is recorded as a prominent perfumier or perfumer and by extension a chemist. We have her name recorded. We have her occupation and she's the first professional chemist perfumer that we have.
And she actually recorded her techniques, which is why we even know about any of it.
Yeah. So ancient recipes.
Super rad. I don't know a whole lot about this. I don't know if you do or not, but like a lot of the history about perfume also revolves around the making of incense, which you have actually done.
I have. Yes, I've made loose incense, but you're right. Definitely because, well, when you think of, you know, Bible stories, the wise men brought gifts. Two of the three were incense.
Right.
And frankincense and myrrh. So using sacred fumigants as an incense or as a perfume from the get-go had extraordinary value and religious significance.
Right.
Which totally makes sense because, I mean, something that smells amazing, it transports you.
Right.
You know, you totally understand why it would be valuable and why people would immediately employ it in a spiritual capacity.
Right. Right. So it wasn't just about like smelling good. It was a lot of times like incense, perfumes, those kinds of things were used in a religious context, in a temple, in worship, in order to bring about some sort of elevated feeling.
Perfume from the Latin to smoke out.
Right.
So to fumigate and presumably in a ritual context.
Excellent. Use that Latin. Use it.
I try.
Don't lose it. I mean, I know there's also a whole lot of history in India as well. India, as far as, you know, they really preferred distillation techniques.
Yeah, I don't know a ton about the science.
Same.
But obviously there are things that are just naturally aromatic that just naturally produce volatile oils right. that are easy to smell and that are long lasting. Things that tend to fade
right.
using other agents as a mordant. I don't know if you call it a mordant. That's what you call it in dye.
No.
From mordere to mean bite. Things that something has some grasping
right.
power. I don't know what you would call it.
A couple of the main techniques for making perfume is distillation. Another one is like actual pressing, which takes a lot of whatever the thing that you are pressing and trying to get the oil out of. it takes a lot. And I remember when I was in high school, we had a took a field trip to Europe. I mean, it wasn't a field trip. That's a dumb word. It was like a senior trip to Europe, and where you did like 4 countries in 10 days. Good luck. Have a good time. But we did get to go to a perfumery. And that was the thing that was the most mind-blowing, is how many flowers it actually takes to make perfume. It's kind of nuts. It's a lot. Well, it's kind of like when we went to the tea place in Sri Lanka, too. Like, it takes a fuck ton of tea leaves to make tea.
This is a kind of an anecdote, but going to perfume history, one of my favorites is kaifi, which is an Egyptian incense. And it was used as a perfume, was also used as a medicine. And we have 3 different recipes for it that are literally written on temple walls.
Wow.
So you can literally make it exactly how they did. There's no mystery. There's no knowledge that has been lost over the thousands of years.
Have you made it?
So, yeah. I have not made it, but I do have a lot of the raw ingredients, and I do buy it from people that make it. There's sort of a technique in terms of letting it cure or dry out, but the main ingredients are honey, which is sort of a binding agent, so that you get, instead of like a loose incense, that's almost like loose tea, because it's made with myrrh and copal and gum arabic, cinnamon. So it's exactly, I mean, it's all the spicy spice incenses that you think of when you're like, think of smoky, ancient,
right,
very luxurious incenses. And of course, it smells amazing. I also have some kaifi face ointment.
Ooh.
That's got those ingredients in it, because as you can imagine, there's a lot of medicinal benefits to those ingredients.
Yeah.
And it smells good.
Right.
But even going to the Middle Ages, people not bathing frequently.
Yeah.
Having things that smell great not only were a necessity because being in proximity to smelly humans was rough, but also people didn't understand germ theory.
Right.
There were rampant plagues.
Yeah.
So a lot of these things also took on sort of a prophylactic or protective quality of purifying the air. This idea of, well, somehow the air is making us sick, so if we make it smell nice,
it won't make us sick anymore.
Which there now has been studies going back, so like the ingredients in Four Thieves vinegar have been shown to be antimicrobial.
Right.
Lavender and rose were big ones. A lot of these have real beauty and health benefits.
That kind of goes to our next point of, you know, there's lots of scents that have real medical and psychological benefits. Like frankincense has been, you know, proven to help with depression and anxiety. It's good that they fill a Catholic church with it. You know what I'm saying? Lavender has been proven to reduce mental stress.
Also increase feelings of trust among strangers.
Lavender?
Yeah.
Nice. I like that. Peppermint definitely kind of gives you that little boost of energy. I have peppermint right next to me on my desk at work because I feel like there are lots of times that I need that. Rosemary has been researched to help you with increased memory skills.
Yeah, like studying and stuff. So
right.
Kids that were studying for tests with rosemary incense or essential oils tended to focus better and retain more information. It was common in ancient Greece to crown scholars with a wreath of rosemary. So these associations go back, you know, centuries or thousands of years and are now being reinvestigated scientifically. So when we're talking about aromatherapy, there's the sort of pseudoscience element of it. And then there's the science one of people actually studying it in a medical or controlled environment.
Right.
I personally am interested in both. I mean, I think that it's fascinating to actually measure and prove, oh, frankincense for people with low-grade anxiety or depression performs better than placebo or competes even with low-dosage prescription medication. That's fascinating to me. Or that rosemary boosts memory. That's something you can use right away.
Yes.
in terms of things that are a little more amorphous or haven't been researched or are not confirmed by science, I mean, my opinion is if you smell ylang ylang and it makes you feel good because you think it smells great,
fucking use it.
That's boosting your mood. I mean,
right.
That might not correlate to a study, but if you enjoy it and a scent makes you feel invigorated or confident or relaxed,
right,
then it's working for you. Not saying that it will replace medication or will cure cancer.
Right.
But I think that it's very, very subjective. So if something attracts you and you feel like you have, even if it's a placebo effect, like,
I mean, what's that? There's fine. No harm, I mean, in it, right?
Right. So we're pointing out things that have scientific research to back them up,
right.
But certainly the old wives' tale stuff and your own personal anecdotal experiences with particular scents or essential oils is totally valid for you personally.
Absolutely. But I don't know. What do you want to, where do you want to go from here? What's the segue?
Well, do we want to jump in and talk about our all-time favorite perfumes and scents, and then we can kind of circle back to how we use them in a magical capacity?
Yeah, because mine's like more a chronology of my all-time favorite scents, but I wouldn't say that a lot of mine are my all-time favorites. Just like, here's how I have evolved through my scent journey, if you will.
Yes. Give me a timeline.
Okay. So mid-80s. Late 80s, I am becoming a woman. I mean, I'm like a deep in my adolescence. I, you know, started out with Colours de Benetton. It was a very fancy bottle. It was a very fresh, clean scent. It was very like vibrant, up, kind of like, I mean, it's not anything I would wear today. Let's put it that way, because it was very, if I remember correctly, now it's been a long time since I've smelled that smell, but I remember it being a very citrusy, floral, upbeat kind of scent, not what I'm used to now, which is heavy, smoky, get, you know, make it smell like dirt, that kind of scent. So started out with that, and then I jumped from that to K. de Crizia, which was a very, if I, again, this is all, I got to think back, but I, man, if I smelled it, I would know it right away. But less, a little less vibrant. So just like a little weird, strange note, but still a floral. And then I got real into Chanel. So I started wearing number 5, probably through my late teens, early 20s. And, you know, that was also a time when Calvin Klein was huge. So I'm sure there was...
Oh, yeah, with the ridiculous television ads. That was sort of a first that got spoofed endlessly, like on Saturday Night Live. These, like, very, very surreal, weird perfume television ads.
Yeah, they were weird. And, like, a lot of times black and white. I'm pretty sure I owned Obsession. And then they made a brighter one called One that was supposed to be, like, a unisex cologne and or perfume, and I actually liked both of those. I wonder if Obsession would bug me today, because I feel like that's kind of back, I'm back to that kind of vibe where it's like this deep, almost woodsy, scary scent. Like Obsession to me is like so oppressive. I don't know, like I wonder if I would like it now. I feel like, well, anyway, so to continue, there was also, I liked,
well, I have a question.
Yeah, go.
So those first few ones like Benetton and then moving into Chanel number 5, what attracted you to those? Was it because they were trendy or you liked the bottle or it just smelled good to you? You weren't interested in the marketing whatsoever? I mean, Chanel obviously has a ton of history behind it, so it's kind of hard to escape.
Yeah.
But what was your thought process?
I don't know. I think a lot of like my fashion sense then was very of the time, very trendy, very I mean, I don't think I was wearing neon per se, but like before I was like a senior in high school and went like full goth, I was kind of, you know, I had like a fucking tulle miniskirt. You know, it was very like the time of Madonna and fucking big chunky jewelry. And, you know, the ads for Benetton, at least, were very, very inclusive. It was like one of the first ads I remember being so inclusive.
Because the clothes themselves are very simple, but very brightly colored. But then you'd have this very diverse fashion spread of young, old, different body types, different skin tones, everything. So that was kind of totally their whole brand.
Yeah, and it was very, I don't know, that really appealed to me at like 16 years old. But I think by the time I was like 18, I was more into like classic type stuff. I wanted to kind of went through this phase where I wanted to evoke a bygone era. You know, I had like a cigarette holder and a cigarette case and, you know, wore Chanel and I was a very fancy lady at 19. So that lasted for a couple of years. And then like the obsession and the CK1, I probably just had as gifts or whatever and wore occasionally. But I think like Chanel was always a go-to. I wore a fragrance that I had to look up because I couldn't remember it at first, but then the name came to me and we talked about it the other day. It was called Realm. And I don't know if anybody out there remembers it, but looking at the packaging now, I was like, A, this is some trippy packaging because there's like a package that has orange flowers all over it, but then there's a face coming out of the flowers. And then in the marketing, it says, with real human pheromones. And
whoa,
I know, I kind of remember that being part of the selling point for me. And I think I wore that fucking perfume for a long ass time. I really liked it. I still like it, but you can, it, I don't think they make it anymore. And now if you want it, it's like $200. So I will not be getting any Realm, but man, I loved that shit. It was very, it was almost like a lighter form of obsession. Like it wasn't so dark like obsession. It was a little brighter, but still very more to what I am into now, which is like, I don't know, like if you were walking through a forest made of amber is how I would like to describe it.
That sounds amazing.
Right? Everything's real smoky and different hues of orange. I don't know how else to describe it except kind of deep and woodsy and maybe a hint of campfire. It was really, really good.
Like this.
It was good. Well, I mean, I could be fucking insane and it may not smell like that at all, but that's how I remember
Dude,
it.
Dude, you need to recreate your memory of it though. Even if it's, oh, that would be a really interesting experiment.
It would be hard. Cause
for us, for these perfumes that are out of circulation, or even ones that are, just to try to recreate what you remembered it smelling like,
and then
going back and seeing
that would be,
if it's similar or different.
You can get like a half bottle of it on eBay for like $40 or $50. So it's almost worth it to me just to smell it one more time and be like, oh, was I into that? Is it, do I still love it? I mean, I remember really liking it for a long time. So,
oh. We're going to have to do a follow-up perfume episode. I'm very curious about this because I want to smell it.
Well, then I went through like an Alfred Sung phase in my, I would say, mid-20s to late-20s. So I wore regular Sung for a while, but then I wore She, which is S-H-I, and then Forever by Alfred Sung. And all of those, well, except for like original Alfred Sung is very Chanel-y almost. But like She and Forever are very bright, very floral, very upbeat, very citrus. I don't know if I was like trying to talk myself into being happy. I'm not really sure. It was during my first marriage, which was turned out to be a disaster. But I remember really, really liking that. And I don't know if I was influenced by a friend. A lot of times I smell something on somebody else and I'm like, oh, I really like that. Then I'll buy it. And it either doesn't smell the same. I mean, I remember being fine with those, but like that is just a scent that I would never be attracted to now. So now what I gravitate to are essential oil or oil combinations that people are selling mostly on Etsy. And there's one website in particular that is, it's, she's not on Etsy, but her stuff is amazing. It is called Whisper Sisters. And I have been wearing their stuff almost exclusively for the last three or four years. And she has just like a shit ton of different scents. But the first one I bought that I was like immediately, the names are amazing. The first one.
Yeah, it's goth as
goth
fuck.
Goth as fuck. I mean, she's clearly a witch. Whatever. I don't know. I don't want to like say she's definitely a perfume witch, if I can say. But the first one I bought was called Goth Club 89. And the,
yes.
The whole ad.
Does it smell like a goth club in 89?
So it is like heavy on the menthol, which is 100% on brand, which that's not really what the club smelled like, but like I smoked menthols. Everybody I knew smoked menthols or cloves. And it's very clove cigarette, menthol. It is to me, like I can't wear this every day because it is so evocative of that time period, which is kind of weird. Like I don't want to be transported back to 19 and right out of high school. It's like too scary. But she has some other ones that I absolutely love. One of my favorites is called Beloved. And it is slightly floral, which is not super woodsy like I normally like, but it's got like some kind of like, I don't know, almost like decaying rose note that I love. And then there's also one called The Witch that is just straight up if you were walking around inside autumn casting spells all the time. It's just like dark and deep and like a pumpkin spice fucking evil spell. I don't know. Like if you took pumpkin spice and made it evil, it's, I don't know. I love it. And then Gloomy Sunday is another favorite.
Ooh, yeah. I like that name.
Yeah. That's what I'm wearing right now. And oh, and I got to mention when you sent me that Lone incense from that company called Blackbird, which I have mentioned in the newsletter, they sent me a sample of perfume that is called Cold Cave Death. And they couldn't have named it more aptly because that is exactly what it smells like. It smells like you are inside a dark, damp cave and that you are going to be like put in a coffin. It is fantastic. It's very leathery, it's kind of evokes the memory of what Villainess used to be. Mm-hmm. Some of their scents, that very mossy, low down, kind of creepy notes. Anyway,
I feel like you like a lot of those sort of really raw patchouli, not like a gross, fake, hippie, like, Renaissance fair patchouli, but like a real resiny, woody, mossy, loamy. I feel like a lot of the things you like sort of have that base note.
I mean, like if I could cover like dirt. If I could cover my body in just straight up frankincense every day, like if it wasn't $70 a bottle, I would 100% do that. But yeah, if I could smell like the soil, but also make it smell a little pretty. Yes, that is what I like.
Do you do the thing where you like rotate scents seasonally or have like a daytime and a nighttime scent? Do you go by these sort of old fashioned conventions of when and where to don your perfume?
I don't, but I love the fact that I was raised in a perfume house for sure. My mother is, she doesn't really wear it anymore, but when she did, she went by the seasons. So she had a springtime perfume and then a fall/wintertime perfume. And in the spring, it was anise, which is like in a white bottle. It's real floral, very, it was very floral. But then she wore opium the rest of the time. I mean, she would keep.
That is a drastic.
Oh, yeah.
Change.
Yes. But like very, that one is so like in your face with how upfront the scent is. It was just, and she would save all the opium bottles. She was very into that. And I won't wear it, but I still like the smell of it. But I don't do that. No, I kind of base it on the day, which is weird, but like I choose it based on how I feel when I get out of the shower.
Nice.
All right, let's hear it. Your turn, lady.
Okay. The first two perfumes that I started wearing, well, back up. So I did not come from a perfume household. My mom doesn't wear perfume. She doesn't like scented things. She is like Dove soap or die. That is it. She's so Presbyterian and austere and Capricorn and just wants things to be white and clean. And my dad doesn't wear cologne. So becoming a teenager, first getting introduced to perfume seemed very exotic and decadent and luxurious and
forbidden.
A little forbidden, yeah, just because I didn't have it. She didn't have it.
Right.
I remember, like, kind of my first foray is one holiday I got a set of Petit Naté, like bath jellies and body spray. The one that I liked was Baby Soft. Loves Baby Soft.
Yeah.
Which, fortunately, I was not exposed to the really outrageous 70s ads that had, like,
a song,
a literal little girl, like a little girl.
Yes.
Like an elementary school girl.
Yes.
But, like, made up. And it was like, there's nothing sexier than innocence. It was real gross.
Yeah.
But as an actual child, it basically just smells like baby powder and, like, some incense or musk. It's actually really delightful. Mm-hmm. But the first perfume I got, Hypnotic Poison, mm-hmm. which is I have come back to.
Nice.
And that came out in 98. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing the ads with amazing Mila Jovovich, who's great.
Yep.
And it was so in your face, unlike some of the other ads that basically just a black and white, like, sky fabric billowing in the wind and, like, it doesn't really convey anything. And then Hypnotic Poison is Mila's gorgeous face, like, right up front. She's, like, doing this sort of very Daughter of Dracula pose.
Right.
And it's red. The background's red. She's got a red light shining on her. I mean, it's,
and you were,
it's
like,
Scarlett's greatest hit of everything that I love.
No shit.
And I kind of got away from it and then started wearing it again probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago. And it's still my go-to. And it is considered a floral oriental. Mm-hmm. I like things that are, like, spicy, not fruity, not grassy, not citrusy, not super floral.
Right.
A little bit gourmand. So I like things that are like vanilla and cinnamon and incense. And so Hypnotic Poison is definitely like that. There's vanilla, sandalwood, musk, spice. But the interesting note that sets it apart and why I keep coming back to it is there's this sort of like cherry almond note. Like this sort of sweet, kind of candy,
arsenic, sort of, kind of.
Yes.
I love it.
Cyanide.
Oh, man.
Note to it.
That's awesome.
On top of this sort of smoky, very unisex incense base. And I just love it. The other one that I wore, I went to Sephora in the mall with my first boyfriend, and we smelled every single perfume and cologne. And the one I picked out for me with his help, very romantic, was Alchemy by Rojas, mm-hmm. which is another oriental. It's vanilla and caramel, amber.
Well, that sounds
I love
nice.
Amber.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit lighter. It's kind of sweet. And that came out in 1998, too. I bought them because I love oriental amber scents.
Yeah.
But also very much like the packaging and the name.
Sure.
Obviously, Hypnotic Poison sounds fucking badass as shit.
Yeah.
Alchemy,
right.
Super cool and witchy. And then in 2002, when I was in college, Dior Addict came out, which was like super weirdly controversial. I was like, do y'all not remember opium?
Yeah, right.
It was straight named after a narcotic
drug. Still a thing.
But
yeah.
Amber, vanilla, musk. It's got like a powder note, so kind of bringing back that like Love's Baby Soft.
Wow.
So it's smoky, but also sort of sweet. I like edible kind of scents,
mm-hmm,
so like
same.
Things that are like vanilla, caramel, things like that. And I used to mix that with Alchemy.
Mm-hmm.
So, because Alchemy is a little bit sweeter and a little brighter and has some kind of like brighter floral notes like heliotrope, jasmine.
Yeah.
And then the dry down on Addict, the top notes of like vanilla and powder kind of fade and mellow out into this more rich incense-y smell. So I would combine them. Now I mostly wear Hypnotic Poison.
Yeah.
But I did, for a brief time when Pure Poison came out and I was living in New York, that was my summer scent because, and I associate it very strongly with that particular year, place, being out in the street where, you know, it's like you're just smelling car exhaust and like smelly subway.
Right.
So kind of counteracting that, but Pure Poison, it's okay. I probably wouldn't. I still have a bottle. I don't really want to wear it.
Yeah.
It's very white floral. So it's like white musk is the base, but then it's like jasmine and tuberose, and it's a little too flowery for me.
Right.
And then when I moved into the Witch House, I started getting really interested. I was reading all this stuff about Victorian history and everyone's taking laudanum. And I was like, what does laudanum and opium, like, what do they smell like? So I hope the NSA is not monitoring my Google searches and stuff, because of course I was immediately like, what does laudanum
taste like? How do you make opium?
Like? What does opium smell like?
Right.
And so, of course, I went and bought a bottle of Opium, the perfume, which is not, I assume, what, like, burning poppy tar actually smells like.
Doubt it.
But it's definitely was designed by Yves Saint Laurent, and it was very controversial at the time, as mentioned, but it's definitely meant to evoke this very illicit, narcotic, smoky vibe, and it's very, I mean, it's heavy. First of all, it's like very, very heavy. It's not sweet, it's not feminine, and also it's very up your nose. A little bit goes a long way. It one, it has a ton of staying power. Two, it is very pungent. So this is not like a spray it all over yourself situation at all.
No.
But it's mostly myrrh and amber, and it's got that patchouli base note that gives it that really strong, deep, dirty.
Like, I almost want to own a bottle just so that when I want to think of growing up in the fucking 80s and 90s, so I can, you know, remember my mom by that smell, because, God, she wore that perfume for like 30 fucking years. So,
well, and I know, because the one I have is the 2009 reboot, which I'm told by purists
doesn't
is not
the
same.
Yeah.
Everyone, I mean, I don't know how accurate that is, or if people just have fonder memories of, they're like, it'll never be the same.
I don't know. My mom did say, because I had to get it from like a perfume shop, and she thought those were different. She thought that because I didn't buy it at Dillard's anymore, it wasn't. You know, it wasn't the same, but I know. Is that even around anymore?
Nope.
Yeah, no, didn't think so. I would think that it still has most of the same notes. You know, I doubt it.
I mean, I think the 2009 smells good.
Yeah.
That's the only opium I know,
right.
And I like it.
Right.
Now, would I like the original more? Probably.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is the new one inferior?
Probably not.
I like it, so that's hard for me to say.
Right.
But so I also associate it with, because I got it when we got the house, so I associate it very much with Victoriana and the house, and that's when I started hosting Uncoven, so I associate it very much with that. I mean, I could talk about this for forever, but the history of opium is very interesting to me.
Oh, yeah.
It, when I was doing my deep dive about, like, what does laudanum taste like? What does opium smell like?
Mm.
I read this really interesting memoir, and we can cut this if we want to, but I think it's super interesting, and it definitely fuels my interest in the perfume and probably why I like it so much, is that the reason why opium was so successfully eradicated when everybody was doing morphine and cocaine all the time in the olden days, heroin was literally a brand name by Bayer, and it was marketed as a less addictive form of morphine, which it's not. But the whole thing about opium, which is they're all from the poppy plant, the thing about opium that I learned was that there's kind of like absinthe, there's this whole process to it. Like, it's not discrete the way that having a little dropper full of laudanum or like doing a little syringe of morphine or drinking a Coca-Cola with the cocaine in it.
Yum.
You know, opium is not discreet.
Right.
So you smoke it. I am a person that has never done drugs.
Right.
So I'm going to sound like an old fucking lady, but not so old that I did opium.
That would be real
old. But you don't smoke it, you vaporize it. So it has this very particular type of pipe because you need to have it at a very specific temperature
right.
so it doesn't burn. And then, of course, like, you get sleepy as shit.
Yeah.
So you want to have, like, a special bed.
Right.
You think of these, like, very ornate Chinese opium beds. Because you want to be able to lay down, but then also position your pipe over the heat source at a particular angle. And then there's like this whole thing with the lamp
yeah.
that is lighting it. You know, of course, when you're high as shit, you want these like soft, beautiful shadows. So then the whole shade of the lamp becomes part of it, of the how it sparkles or how it casts shadows. And then there's all these other accoutrements for, like, preparing it.
It sounds so like magical. This, right?
So it's like this tar, so, like, you kind of mix it up as like, a little round pill to put it in the opium pipe. So there's these, like, long needles that look like hat pins.
Right.
They're called opium needles, but they're not, like, intravenous.
Right.
Like, you syringe like, needles. They're... Anyway, and the reason why this guy that I was reading this book about got into it is that he was into antiques.
Right.
And like people that get really passionate about collecting things like you do, he hit on opium paraphernalia because at the time there was, I mean, if you think of anything that anybody collects, like trains or Barbie dolls or Legos or, you know, whatever... There's like literal encyclopedias of everything that you would ever want to know
Absolutely.
About this stuff, the history of it, the value of it, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
There, when he got into it, there's nothing about it. And that's because opium was like aggressively banned
right.
in contrast to these other drugs that were almost identical chemically. And that's because, sort of like with absinthe, it was getting scapegoated, although it's super duper addictive,
like,
so it's not on the same caliber, but in terms of the same MO of scapegoating one product
right.
to sort of draw the fire away from these other products that people were really enthusiastic about using, is that because there's this whole rigmarole with it, and you would have to like probably go to an opium den.
Which I love that it's called that. I love that it's called a den.
Yeah.
It sounds so... Like, I just want an opium den and maybe no opium. It's good. Like, I just don't want all the shit and surround myself in all this cool stuff and then just lay there. I don't need the drug.
So, one, it's not discreet.
Right.
It's, like, hard to go acquire and do... And it was generally imported from China, so there's all this kind of racist bullshit about it being foreign
right.
and gross. So it was very easy to scapegoat it, because if you were addicted to opiates, you could very easily just do morphine or heroin, which were marketed as medicine.
You could just buy it.
And do them discreetly
yep.
in your own home. So kicking opium for... these other substitutes was like not a hard transition for drug addicts.
Right.
So I just think that that's really fascinating. But because the ban and destruction of these opium dens, and they would have big bonfires where people would burn like opium pipes and stuff. And again, there's like a very racist element to this
oh,
as
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
So because of that, there's just not a lot of scholarship or history or antiques available because of that. And this guy jumped in right when eBay was first getting hot, and he would get all these awesome, amazing opium antiques because people didn't even know what they were.
Right.
They just thought that they were like hookah pipes or hat pins instead of the opium needles. Like, people just found this shit in their attic 100 years ago. Someone's grandma put all that stuff up there, and no one's thought about it since then.
Wow.
And now they're like cleaning out this old barn and just putting stuff up on eBay. So anyway, long story short, this gentleman actually was like so curious, got so into collecting, and was like traveling Asia and was like, well, I gotta try the opium.
And he got addicted to it.
Don't try it. It is not a recreational drug whatsoever. But anyway, because of all of that, like, that history is fascinating to me. Just how it was very ritualized, how there's all these art objects that are associated with it.
So elaborate.
Yeah, just the social, political climate of how it in particular got demonized disproportionately, or rightly so, is highly addictive.
But there were also other substances that were the same. So, right.
That are chemically basically the same. So anyway, all of that was like super interesting to me. So I went into buying Opium the perfume with all of that in my mind.
Right.
So that's kind of what I was thinking of.
That's amazing. So anyway. Well, what's funny is I don't know that I've ever even smelled you wearing it, because I would recognize it instantly if I did. So I don't know. You'll have to wear it next time I'm in town. All right.
Maybe it just smells different on me.
It might. It very well might. It also, like, I think my mom would take a fucking bath in it. She wore a shit ton of it. It was very, very strong in my house growing
up. It's extremely strong.
Yes. Like, it doesn't take that much. And yet, but it was very easy to get her a gift because she would take a bottle of opium every Christmas. What do you think your favorite scents say about you? I like that question.
I think that all my scents, because my taste hasn't actually changed that much over time.
Right.
So I would say that they're very on brand for me. They're not feminine. They're very spicy. Mm. And most of the brands I love tend to have this very like gothic or witchy or dangerous, spooky sort of branding to them, either the name or the packaging. Because there's other oriental perfumes that I would dig, but I just never got into.
Right.
Like Shalimar would totally be up my alley. I've smelled it.
Yeah.
And I have a bottle of it, but I just don't ever wear it, you know. There's a lot of,
it's just not witchy enough.
It's not.
No. Yeah, for me, and we kind of already talked about it, but I like a edible scent, like mixed with a decaying something scent, like insert anything, decaying flower, decaying other food, decaying earth, whatever. But I like that off note that is about the, like, almost the sickly sweetness of decay.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm totally on board with that.
Yeah.
Like, I like the gourmand notes, like vanilla, caramel, cinnamon, clove. But then I like that dark note that's just a little bit off. So it doesn't, you don't smell like a sugar cookie.
Right.
Smells like a sugar cookie, with, but like in a gray.
Blood on it. Right. Exactly. Like, I think we like a lot of the same types of scents. So we're good perfume buddies together. We like to give each other
gifts. We are good perfume buddies.
I wanted to say, so
all the time.
I got Scarlett some samples recently, which I had no idea what they were actually going to smell like, but the bottle was so cool. And I realized that samples don't come in the actual bottle that it's actually bought in, but it was called Neanderthal. They were all real, like, not really you. They weren't like woodsy, smoky, right? They were kind of like bright.
They
and weird.
Were, but I need to go back and look at my notes, because when I was describing them to you, it was hilarious.
Yeah.
But I totally get like why you sent them to me, and I'm glad you did, because I would have tried it regardless because I love the names and the branding and everything.
Right.
Neanderthal, I'm obsessed with Paleolithic archaeology.
Yes.
The bottle looks like
a fucking rock.
Yeah, it looks like a flint arrowhead.
Yeah.
It looks fucking rad. The descriptions of the notes are very much woody and smoky and stuff. Didn't smell as great as I had hoped, but I'm certainly not blaming you for that, because I was super intrigued to smell it anyway.
Well,
so thank you very much. I'm certainly not trying to shit all over your generosity.
No.
Because it was very enjoyable to smell them and take notes and all of that kind of stuff.
Well, I think that's a good segue into, this has turned out to be a much lengthier discussion than what we originally thought, but I think it warrants a part 2. Don't you think so?
Oh, yeah, because we haven't even gotten into, like, how we actually do witchy stuff with it, other than just we like things that smell like how we imagine witches smell.
Right. And, I mean, I hope this conversation has kind of helped everybody that's listening to really think about your favorite scents and kind of your evolution of what you used to wear when you were younger as opposed to now. I think it's an interesting thing to explore about your own persona.
I enjoyed hearing about yours because I agree. I think we like very similar scents. And I feel like that somehow, like, says something about our friendship.
I think it right? does. Yeah. I mean, we're both just not super high floral note people. I think what I am wearing now and what I am getting closer and closer to what I think is a true, pure version of myself. And I don't know what that means, really, because I think we're constantly evolving as human beings. But I do think there was a, this is getting really philosophical, but like when I was younger, I was really told how to behave and told how to act. And I wasn't really great at casting off that. I very much ascribed to the person that my parents wanted me to be, that friends wanted me to be, until I got real goth. So I think it just took like a little bit of listening to some sad bastards to say, yo, I'm going to smell how I want, you know, then had, you know, brief fleeting moments of trying to be somebody else and then just coming back to what I consider home. So, yes.
What does that say about me? I've basically been this on the same brand since forever.
But you've
literally came back to my high school scent. I've always been that, like, in your face, obnoxious, kind of aggressive sexuality, like things that are red colored.
But that's kind of like what you've said about yourself. You know, in other podcasts we've done about looking within yourself or whatever, you've always said, I am kind of the same person. Like, now I've personally known you for what, over 10 years now? 10 years for sure.
Ooh,
and I know, yeah. It's crazy. And I mean, I have seen you grow in different ways, but you have always been a person that doesn't like really, you don't subscribe to what other people's ideals of you or a person are. Like, you are just you. And that's a really, I mean, to me, that's a really high compliment, because we live in a world where people are constantly telling other people how to be, like, what's wrong with you, or what, you know, what you're doing that's not right. And like, you're kind of like double middle finger to everyone, because I'm just going to be who I am. So to me, that's really
the onlyest child.
That's to me, that's awesome. That's fucking amazing, because you fucking figured it out. Anyway,
send your kids to all girl private school, non-denominational though.
Do it.
Because if you have to wear a uniform every day, you get real passionate about expressing yourself.
Yeah, through perfumes. All right, so we're going to do part two of this about how we use perfume in a witchy way. But for now, thanks for joining us for Super Sorcerer Sunday and
Hocus Pocus Bitches!